We have a number of new members, and Tiffany being back with her little one, we're very blessed to have these young children. You know, I'm going to take just a second here. We visited a couple of smaller congregations while we were gone, and you realize sometimes when you get away and you go to certain churches like that, that just how blessed we are. I was telling one fellow that I've known for a long, long time how many children we have here. And I said, and there's a birth of a new baby we're going to meet when we get back. And he was just marveling at that and how that this church is unique almost. With so many congregations around the country struggling, don't have younger people, certainly don't have a lot of children, and we're blessed with that. So let's take advantage of that and reach out and try to give all the influence and the encouragement we can so this church may remain very strong as time goes on. I might say more about that in the coming weeks, but I want to get right into the lesson this morning. I appreciate Edward leading the song and talking about the trial of Jesus. And you know, from time to time, I've been doing a lesson about the people sort of that are involved in the congregation, or in the crucifixion, rather. And this morning, I want to focus our attention on Pilate and Herod. These are the, you might say, the worldly officials that were involved in the crucifixion. And as we look at these, what we're going to find, thank you, sir, what we're going to find is that they're very different, at least as far as how we see them in the gospel account of the crucifixion, and yet not so dissimilar. And you may have noticed in the bulletin, I kind of asked a question about that. So we'll look at that as we go on. But let's get right into the lesson. The crucifixion of Jesus obviously came directly at the hands of the Jews. When we think of who perpetrated this whole event, we would say, well, the Jews crucified Jesus. But we realize that, in fact, it was facilitated by the Roman officials, Pilate and Herod, and the part he played in that. When we look at the book of Acts, and I'd like for you to turn with me to Acts chapter 4, when Peter is bringing the charge of guilt, so to speak, against the people here, he makes mention of the fact, if you'll notice in this prayer, and this is right in the middle of a prayer, but verse 27, "For of a truth, against thy holy child Jesus, whom thou hast anointed," as he prays to the Father, "both Herod and Pontius Pilate, with the Gentiles and the people of Israel, were gathered together." And so a lot of people were involved, and we've made mention of that and pointed that out in the past. But today we want to focus on these Roman officials. Now, as we look at this, again, I want to emphasize this in the lesson this morning. Two individuals, but perhaps not so different from one another. And each played their part in Jesus' crucifixion. Now let's focus on that a little bit further. Who was Pontius Pilate? Well, Pilate was the recently appointed, and I think you should understand that. If you look at his actions, and a lot of people see, as they look at Pilate, they see someone who's very ambivalent. Does he want to crucify Jesus? Does he not? He seems to be very reluctant. The Bible even points that out. But you have to understand that he was the recently appointed Roman prefect over Judea, or as the Bible, the King James especially, and others, the governor. He was under Tiberius Caesar. Now, as we continue to look at him, we realize that he was reluctant. If you remember, in John 18, you may want to turn there, and I'm going to primarily stay in John 18 and 19. It'll be very easy for you to follow along. But if you look at John 18, start in verse 28 with me, and notice the Jews did leave Caiaphas, let me back up and say it like this. Caiaphas leading this did bring Jesus to the praetorium, or the hall of judgment. And they set him before Pilate. One of the first things out of Pilate's mouth, maybe the first thing out of his mouth, verse 29, was, "What's the accusation?" He demanded of them, perhaps he had some knowledge of Jesus, I don't know. But immediately he wants to know, what's he guilty of? Maybe it is just that this mob bringing Jesus to him prompts that question. But what's the accusation? Now, you know people. When you ask a direct question like that, what's the accusation you bring against them? If Jesus is guilty, if there's something really wrong, then they're going to come right out and say, you know, he's a thief. He killed somebody, or whatever it might be. But they dodge the question. And you know how that is in dealing with people. When someone begins, and I know this is true of me, when I ask a direct question or I make a direct statement that elicits a response, if someone begins immediately to dodge it, something ain't right. You know? And we know that. And that's what you see here. What's the accusation that you bring against the man? And they immediately look at verse 30. They answered and said, if he weren't a malefactor, in other words, if he wasn't a bad guy, we wouldn't bring him to you. Well, that doesn't answer the question. That tells me what you think of him, but that doesn't answer the question. So in the verses that follow, Pilate really cross-examines Jesus, if you will. Now, I'm not going to read all of this, but you can for yourself, and you should. You notice that Pilate asked him the question, are you the king of the Jews, verse 33? I mean, let's just have it straight out. Are you leading a rebellion? Are you a king? Jesus answers it in such a way that makes Pilate think. He says, he answers and he says, my kingdom is not of this world. Well, what does that mean? And Pilate realizes this is not a rebel. This isn't just some revolutionary. This is not a guy that's trying to bring a coup against Rome or something like that. This is something else going on here. And it troubles Pilate. My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight, but it's not from here. Well, that's different. And then Jesus speaks of the truth. And Pilate asks, what is truth? And Jesus leaves that question kind of hanging, as if to say, what is truth? Well, that's a question that requires a lot heavier answer than I'm going to give right now. But you need to check into that. All of that bothers Pilate. As he cross-examines Jesus, he realizes Jesus is not the troublemaker the Jews are trying to make him out to be. He's just not a bad guy. And that's what they're saying. If he wasn't a bad guy, we wouldn't bring him. Well, he doesn't appear to be a bad guy. Interestingly to me, Pilate is the only one. I mean, just stop and think about it. What do you know about Jesus? He didn't answer this person. He didn't answer that one. He answered not a word. You know, he even the night before, as the Jews were questioning him in the Sanhedrin, they got mad. They began to beat on him. You don't answer the high priest and all of this kind of thing. Pilate is the only one during the whole ordeal that Jesus really answers. And I find that interesting. I mean, of all these people, not Caiaphas, not Annas, not the guards that come out, you know, to arrest him, not the Sanhedrin, not, you know, but Pilate. Why? And I wonder, and please take this with a grain of salt. You know, when I say that, it's just for you, something for you to think about, and I can't prove this from the Word of God or anything. But I wonder, does Jesus perceive something in Pilate? Is there a conflict of feeling, a real, deep conflict? In other words, even though this guy is a Roman official, and even though this guy is the prefect or the governor over all Judea, even though he has all of this power, does he really have, at this point in time, a good heart? Or is there at least something in him? Jesus perceives that. Is he at a pivotal point in life? And you know, you reach those. I think maybe one great time in life, perhaps for some of us, a very few times, you reach a really pivotal point. You're either going to turn your life around, you're going to change your life and live your life the way you're supposed to, or you're never going to. And when you reach that point in life, you have to seize the moment. You have to turn to God and obey God, because the truth is, if you don't, when you're struggling so much with your conscience, you may never again. Circumstances of life, just like the parables that Jesus tells, for example, the parable of the sower, the things of life may jump up and entangle and choke you as he tells the story there. Is Pilate at such a point in his life? Is his conscience really bothering him? I'm in this position of life and death over people, and here comes to me the best person I've ever met, and that, what do I do? It's my job, it's perhaps my life, you know, how I handle this, or it's what I really believe in my heart that I should do. But if I do it, what might I give up? You know, it's kind of like the rich young ruler. He went away sorrowful because he had a lot, you know. I wonder if that's what's going on with Pilate. We may never know that, at least not in this life. But it's interesting that Jesus pays attention to Pilate and answers him. And I find that really strange in a way. But it's only true initially. If you notice how the story progresses, after Pilate starts compromising, there are the beating, or beatings, depending on how you interpret that. But once Jesus is beaten, and once the soldiers mock him, and Pilate allows that, perhaps is even in favor of that, to try to compromise here, to try to stop him from being put to death. And you know how sometimes you reach things in life, or situations in life, and you feel like you have a choice between wrong and wrong. You know, the so lesser of two evils stuff. Is Pilate, has he reached that point and said, well, I can't do right. I can only do wrong. Let me take the lesser of two evils. Once he gets to that stage, the whole tone changes. That's when you begin to see Jesus not answering him. Pilate asking him more questions and Jesus doesn't. And he even says to Jesus, you don't answer me? Don't you know who I am? And the last thing he says is, you wouldn't have the authority you have if God from above hadn't given it to you. What a statement to leave with the man. I wonder if it drove him mad. There are some interesting things about Pilate after this incident. You should go and read in history. But it's a very interesting situation with Pilate. Pilate concluded, however, look at verse 38. When he said, what is truth? When he had said that, he sent out again unto the Jews, and he said unto them, I find in him no fault at all. But you have a custom. Here's a, you know, we're going to try this. You have a custom that I should release unto you one at the Passover. Remember, it was the feast of the Passover. Will you therefore that I release unto you the king of the Jews? And they cried all of them again, saying, not this man, but Barabbas. And Barabbas, of course, was a robber. He was a murderer. He had caused a riot, etc., etc. Pilate concluded, I find no fault in him. And from that point on, he's trying to release him. The Jews won't have it. What was going on in Pilate? Well, we've already talked some about it, but I want to suggest several things that are interesting in this passage. I'm just going to list them for you to think about. Number one, and this is most important, he knew Jesus was innocent. Look at verse 38. I find in him no fault at all. Look at chapter 19, verse 4. Pilate therefore went again and said to them, behold, I bring him forth to you, that you may know that I find no fault in him. Look at verse 6. When the chief priests therefore and the officers cried out, saying, crucify, crucify, Pilate said, take you him and crucify, for I find no fault in him. At least three distinct times. He's not guilty of anything. I don't find any fault in him. He knew he was innocent. He was amazed at Jesus' silence while he was being accused by the Jews. You might want to flip back to Matthew 27. And this is where the Jews, and John is kind of making a passing reference to it. But the Jews are just insisting. I mean, they're vehement is the King James word for it. They're agitated. They're fired up, people might say today. They're very mad. And they're crying and screaming for blood. And Pilate is watching Jesus. I mean, the mob is one thing. We see mobs. I mean, really, after you've seen a bunch of mobs, you might be frightened as a child. But by the time you get to an adult age and you've seen mobs and you've seen... It's a little frightening, but you're used to it. But Pilate's focused on Jesus. How can he stand there in complete silence? How can he not be screaming for his life? Pilate marveled at his silence. And it affected Pilate. And plus, he knew their envy, their motive. It was envy. Matthew 27, verse 18. Mark says this as well in chapter 15. He knew they delivered him for envy. They were jealous of Jesus. And jealousy will cause you to do a lot of things, even kill someone. He really wanted to let Jesus go. I want to read this in John 19. Drop down to verse 12. And then again, this is after Jesus had just said, you wouldn't have any authority unless God gave it to you, verse 11. From thenceforth, from that point on, Pilate sought to release him. But the Jews cried out, saying, if you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. Whosoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar. And of course, when Pilate heard that, he figured there's no choice. And so he sat down in the place that's called the pavement in Hebrew, Gabbatha. It was the preparation of the Passover, about the sixth hour. And he said to the Jews, behold your king. And they cried out, away with him, crucify him. Pilate said, shall I crucify your king? The chief priest answered, "We have no king but Caesar." I got to tell you, I've always thought that's one of the most incredible statements. Understanding their history. We have no king but Caesar. He really wanted to let Jesus go. And he was afraid. Look back at verse 8. Now the Bible tells us what was going on in Pilate. When Pilate therefore... Well, back up to verse 7. Notice how the Jews pointed out to him. He made himself the Son of God. Now Pilate's impressed with him by this point. He's marveling at him. And the things that Jesus is saying are telling Pilate, "I'm no ordinary man." Look at verse 8. When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he was the more afraid. I take it from the moment that Jesus brought up there to Pilate. If you didn't know of him before, at least from that moment on, Pilate starts getting scared. This is not normal. This is not right. This is different from anything else. And you know, God gives us the ability to be afraid. Now, some things we're afraid of, we shouldn't be. Some things we fear, God would even tell us in His Word, don't fear, don't be afraid. Turn to me, trust me, have faith in me. But other times, the Bible would teach us to fear and to listen to our fear and to respond to our fear positively. Pilate was afraid, and he should have been afraid. He was sitting in judgment as the ruling official on the Son of God. When you're that afraid of something and you know something is wrong, stop! When your fear says to you, "This isn't right, stop it, get out of here right now," then get out of here. Pilate didn't, and it led to his demise. But he was trying to please everybody. Same problem a lot of people have. I want to please everybody. I want to please God. I want to please my family. I want to please my friends. I want to please myself. I want to please everybody. And you can't. There's just no way to go through life pleasing everybody all the time. Pilate was trying to please everybody. He was trying to defuse the situation. He was trying perhaps to preserve his job. And we know from history that this was a very troubled place in the Roman Empire. And the last thing Rome wanted was trouble. And Pilate knew that. If a full-fledged riot breaks out, then I'll certainly lose my job, but I may die because I'm sent here to keep trouble down. And so maybe he's trying to preserve his job. Maybe he's trying to save his own life. He's struggling with his conscience, and I think that's evident. But trying to please everybody, he just gave in, like so many people do so many times. You know, after the initial cross-examination, as you see in John 8 and the very beginning of John 19, and after declaring all, you know, at least those three times, "I find no fault in Jesus." Something interesting in Luke, and I'm not even going to turn back there and read that. You can in Luke 23. But something very interesting happens that Luke only records for us, because the Jews mention along the way how he had troubled Galilee. Pilate, "Oh, he's from Galilee. Well, here's a way out. I'll just send him to Herod." And of course, you see that in Luke 23. And he does send him to Herod. And really, Herod, let's just take a moment to mention Herod. We talked about him. Herod Antipas, the Tetrarch, was over Galilee and Perea. He had been appointed by Rome to the position of king. And when Jesus was sent to him, if you remember this incident, Jesus is sent to him, and really, there's not much that happens. I mean, Herod, it's almost kind of like a joke. If you ever see all of the movies, the way they portray Herod as a joke. But you know, you dig back into the life of Herod a little bit. You remember that whole incident with Herod taking his brother Philip's wife, Herodias, Salome dancing, John being beheaded. You know, when you look back at that, and if you go back in Matthew 14 and Mark 6, you'll realize there was more to Herod than there was now. Now, slow down with me for just a moment and think about that. What happened to Herod? Why is he such a joke in Luke 23? Why does he seem to be so insignificant, nothing to him? And yet, when you look back in his life, John figured he was worth some time. John talked with him. John preached to him. John tried with Herod. I think Herod, like Pilate, went through a pivotal point in his life. He was a very evil man, a very wicked man, but there was something to Herod. And John tried to get to that, to reach that. By the time of Jesus, you know, maybe 2-3 years later, there's nothing to Herod. He's lived his life, he's made his choices, he's just enmeshed in sin, his life is wrapped up in evil, and there's nothing to him, and he's not worth even one word from Jesus. That ought to scare you. You know, if you're at that point in life and you look at yourself and you say, I think there's some kind of a pivotal point going on in me. You don't want to be like Herod. You don't want to be like Pilate. And maybe you feel like Pilate right now. But you don't want to be like Herod. You don't want to make compromises and give in to the point that some horrible thing like John dying that just seals it. It's done then. You're never turning your life around. Nothing ever is going to happen. By the time that you see him at the trial of Jesus, he's just this neurotic individual. He's pathetic. He may even be insane. Some accounts, at least historical accounts, seem to indicate he was crazy by this time. But he wanted to see a show, and Jesus wasn't doing it. He treated it all as a joke. Jesus is not going along with that. What happened to Pilate, though? Let's go back to him. After Herod sent Jesus back, the compromises, they intensified. When you look at the series of compromises, and really when I was going through and studying for this lesson, I kind of just made a list, and it really surprised me. I mean, I knew all these things, but I don't think I ever sat down and just made a list of all these things that Pilate did. He tried to beat Jesus and let him go. He wanted to use the custom of releasing the prisoner, you know, Barabbas situation. He repeatedly pleaded with the Jews. I find no fault in it. What evil has he done? Neither Herod nor I have found fault in it. That's at least the fourth time in my calculation. Nothing worthy of death. Shall I crucify your king? Pilate is pleading and trying everything at his disposal to stop this crucifixion, short of saying, I've got the power, no! And then deal with the consequences. Maybe he dies for that and goes to heaven. Maybe he loses his job for that and goes to heaven. But sometimes compromise is impossible. You have to make a stand. What we see in Pilate is a person that gave in. If you let this man go, you're not Caesar's friend. I think this is the line that turned Pilate right here. When you look at Matthew 27, verse 24, he saw a tumult, an uproar was rising. So willing to content the people, he delivered Jesus to be crucified. Finally, let's look at Pilate's final attempts to make amends for what he's done. Or to take a stand, some people would say. He ordered the superscription. Ever thought about this, how feeble that is? Are you going to let Jesus die? But hey, I'm putting a sign over him. I'm standing for that. This is Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. And the Jews said, don't write that he is the King of the Jews. Just write that he said he is. Pilate, what I have written, I have written. You ever known someone that will compromise the huge thing, the big thing that ruins their life, and yet here's some little tiny point, almost like a treasure they're holding on to. I will never compromise that. I've known people that some of the grossest, worst sins you can commit, they live in those sins. And yet, what most people would consider at best a debatable little point, they hold that as though it is the holy grail of Christianity. Pilate, I have written it. What I've written, I've written. If you're going to stand for something, Pilate, stand for what needs to be stood for. Then he takes this basin of water and ceremoniously washes his hands to, quote unquote, be innocent of this man's blood. And he wasn't. Acts 4 shows us. When Peter prayed there in Acts 4, you're guilty. And you're forever going to be guilty. You know, you see this kind of thing often when somebody really will not stand for the truth. They feel bad for not standing for the truth, and they want to do something to appease their conscience. But they just won't obey God. Are you here this morning? Are you like Pilate, perhaps? You're at a pivotal point in life. You know what's right. And you can be a member of the church or never have obeyed the gospel. You know what's right. You know what you need to do. If your conscience is bothering you, if deep down in your heart you know what you should do, and you're not doing it, understand, just like this example, the time can pass and you will never obey. Your heart will not, it'll harden, your conscience will sear, you just won't obey God. The Bible speaks of that, it warns us of that. If you're afraid of the way you're living and what you're doing, don't be like Pilate. Take a real stand for God today. Confess your belief in Jesus, that He's the Son of God. Be willing to change your life. Start that today. Be baptized for forgiveness of your sins. Won't you please come while we lead this?